Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Yesterday saw the removal of 163 asylum seekers sleeping in tents in the area around Grand Canal. But just hours after the operation, tents started reappearing, and there have been reports of tensions between residents and migrants. So what next for the Taoiseach's Team Ireland approach? Craig Hughes is the political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, and he's on the line now. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Already we were hearing in our news bulletin there that there are tents popping up on the Grand Canal itself, even after the Team Ireland operation. But yesterday they popped up elsewhere amid some tension.
That's right. And I think this is going to be, I guess, inevitable as the state progresses with their policy of where tents pop up, that they will be taken down. I think inevitably, when you have a lack of accommodation or a lack of suitable sites to direct people to, this is what's going to happen. And yesterday morning, we saw the second large-scale multi-agency operation whereby tents were cleared off the Grand Canal and people bussed out to different locations. But from early morning, tents started to pop up around the Ring's End area and kind of around the East Link toll bridge. My colleague Garrett McNamee was down there talking to kind of Gardaí and other sources in the area, and there appeared to be tensions amongst some people. I'm not sure if they're from the locality or if they're simply anti-refugee agitators. And they moved on the refugees who had started to set up camp in the area. And then subsequently later, one of the tents was slashed and I guess you would say impaled on the entrance to Ring's End Park as, I guess, kind of a warning to tell others not to do so. So I guess very concerning that when you have people being dispersed like that, that you kind of will have safety concerns. There would have been, I guess, a kind of a safety in numbers logic previously. And now we have kind of disparate groups moving around the city, I guess, not knowing where to go.
Now, there actually is a huge amount of green space, not in the area you describe at the roundabout where they're doing the glass bottle site construction of many, many houses and apartments. But there is Ringsend Park. There are green areas running up to the back of the sewage treatment plant. There is an industrial area that leads you down to the incinerator and an ESB station. There's lots of kind of industrial land and kind of just non-used land. And I'm wondering, is that where they're ultimately all going to end up as residents and Team Ireland move them on and move them on and move them on?
Yeah, well, I guess we don't know where they'll go, but I guess what was clear yesterday, and just from monitoring some of these fringe sites on social media, that they were almost seeking them out to go and be aggressive and hostile towards them and say that you can't stay here, which again is a very worrying development and given the climate that we're in at the moment. But I think the government as well has kind of made themselves a kind of hostage to fortune. When you had Micheál Martin as well coming out yesterday on the 6-1, again reiterating the government's point that, you know, these tents will be taken down as soon as they're put up. That puts extra pressure on them now today when you have new tents on other parts of the canal for the state to act quickly. Because they've made that commitment, they really can't be seen to be sitting on their hands and not acting on it. But of course, to reinforce the point that we all know, that there simply isn't the spaces for them at the moment elsewhere.
There's a kind of a cat and mouse thing going on between the government and its various agencies and the NGOs who are clearly furnishing the asylum seekers with tents, brand new tents. They're cheap. They pop up and I don't know what happens to them when they're marked with an X and disposed of. Are they recycled in some way? I don't know. But I pointed out yesterday that NGOs do what NGOs do. They see a need. They see someone without a roof over their head, someone who is in need of a wash, of sanitation, of food, and they try to address that need. And that's what they do. So there's a lot of criticism, I suppose. Where are these guys getting the tents kind of thing? But that's what NGOs do. And on the other hand, then the government takes the very provisions given by the NGOs to the asylum seekers, takes them away and replaces them with something.
Yeah, but of course, it's worse than that because the state is funding these agencies that are providing the tents. So on one hand, you have the state funding these tents to be given out, and then days later, the same state, you know, Team Ireland, coming along and destroying them, and I'd struggle to see how they could be recycled given the way that they're you know taken along with larger elements. Yeah.
I mean, the reality was that some of the asylum seekers, finding themselves in Crooksling, decided this is too far out for whatever we want to do. We want to be near IPASS. We want to be able to go in and maybe check our application or whatever they want to do. Crooksling is too far out. So we go back into town, having just abandoned a tent or have the tent taken away, and we're instantly given another one. I mean, is there any control, I wonder, by the NGOs who say, hang on, you've got your card, your blue identification card, it's number so-and-so. We gave you a tent yesterday. You're not getting another one.
Yeah, I guess that is one of the many challenges that they're going to face here now and how the government kind of seeks to manage people. I mean, we saw that instance that they had to back down from earlier as well, whereby there were signs put up saying that there'd be greater financial incentives for asylum seekers if they left the area around Man Street. We had Minister Heather Humphreys saying that was inadvertently put up yesterday. So that goes back to the challenge that the government have is trying to successfully control the location of where these people go. And it's seen already that Crooksling really is proving to be difficult to try and get people to stay out there.
The obligation of the state is obviously to take in people who are seeking asylum, to process them, and if they are genuine asylum seekers, to offer them some sort of refuge. If, on the other hand, they are not genuine and they're economic migrants, they could be invited to depart and apply through the visa application system if they've got the ability to do a job in our economy. They would be economic migrants with a visa, if you like, and there are so many of those working in the economy. But the obligation of the state should be, I presume, to offer someone a refuge once. And after that, you do your bit, you offer accommodation, and it doesn't have to be salubrious. It should be dry. It should be equipped with sanitation. There should be showers, food available, and so on and so forth. But it doesn't have to be any more than that. And
no, I think
the state doesn't seem capable of even providing those basics and keeping track of people. You know, one offer, take it, or what?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point, Pat. And I think perhaps there's a need for an audit of the state provided accommodation so far. I mean, we'd seen previously with accommodation offered to Ukrainian refugees here that there was kind of capacity that wasn't being filled. So I think perhaps an audit, this is something that Jennifer Whitmore and the Social Democrats are saying to me yesterday, that you know, perhaps an audit of all the accommodation being used needs to take place to make sure that all capacity is being used. And I think it is fair to say that the state is failing in its international obligations to provide safe refuge to people as well. But on the other side of all this, you have this constant argument and constant refrain from government ministers that, you know, we need to be seen to have an asylum process that is firm and fair. It is evidently not firm and fair at the moment. And there's been, you know, numerous cases to underscore that. I mean, let's just go back to Helen McEntee, the Minister for Justice performance at the Oireachtas Media Committee 2 weeks ago, where she said there was 188 instances where EU countries had agreed to take back asylum seekers who'd come here after the transition to Europe, and we only sent back 3. So until the government can get its own house in order on ensuring that the system is firm and fair, they're really going to struggle to bring the public mood along with them.
Now, do we have any analysis as to why the system is not working? I mean, we know that the Conservative government agreed to take 201 people back and nobody was sent back. And this is before the current crisis and the whole Rwanda thing blew up in everybody's faces recently. Do we know, like, who's not doing their job? If there's an agreement that certain people can be sent back and will be accepted by these other countries, who is not doing their job? Or are there agencies, perhaps funded by the state, who are frustrating the state's ability, like by going to the courts and knowing that the whole process will take forever, and therefore the asylum seeker who is not any longer allowed to stay in the state but can delay their departure until it becomes impossible, perhaps, to ask them to leave?
Well, look, it falls on the Department of Justice ultimately. And if you go back historically, I mean, when we had a system where we were talking about people languishing in direct provision for years, that was a system that was allowed become the status quo. So this was an area of the Irish state apparatus that had been largely ignored, and that was largely very down the pecking order in terms of priority for the government. So all of a sudden, you've had a system and officials within a unit in the Department of Justice that has had their workload, you know, multiplied several fold, and they're just simply struggling to do so. And I don't understand, and I have no firm explanation provided to me, despite repeated questioning, as to why other European countries can deport people back to other European countries that have accepted them, whereas our numbers are in the single digits. It's just I've yet to hear a cogent explanation from anyone in government on that.
As I say, some division or some department within a department within a department is not doing its job, but perhaps it's grossly under-resourced. We know that the direct provision centres, that people are living in them who are already gainfully employed because they're allowed to stay here, but they can't find accommodation in the private sector. So they remain within this direct provision system, which should be available to the genuine newcomers who seek asylum.
But again, take a step back. I mean, pre-pandemic, we had the Green Party looking to end direct provision. It was the first time in a long time that anyone had shown that they cared to make this system equitable. You know, so we've had generations of people simply not caring about that system. And in a lot of ways, previously, the offering that we had here acted as a deterrent, and people were happy to turn a blind eye to it, despite all the media reports that we had about how bad situation was in direct provision centres. It was a system that was allowed to remain in place, and it's only now that we feel we have to address it that we're seeing just how under-resourced it's been.
And looking across the political spectrum, I mean, there are people who are in government parties kind of trying to say, we've got to do something, got to do something, and the answer is, well, why didn't you do something? But there are those in opposition who don't seem to have any clear idea as to what to do. Because when you ask, they simply say, well, the government's got to provide accommodation. The second question, where? The answer is always Baggot Street Hospital. Now, the number of times I've heard Baggot Street Hospital from political representatives on the opposition benches, I can't count the number of times they've said this. And this would only probably cope with a week's influx. So Baggot Street Hospital is not the answer. But they don't seem to have any answers.
Yeah, and I think to go back to Baggot Street Hospital, I think there has been a review of that done and a deemed not suitable previously.
More suitable, a tent in Crooksling or a hospital that's still standing and probably in Mickey Mouse repair, but, you know, has it deteriorated so much? Have the rats taken over to the extent that people cannot be housed there? But anyway, as I say, that's only a drop in the ocean.
It is, and I fear perhaps the only solution will be, and I think so some reports for today, is kind of more wider scale tented accommodation in kind of larger state-owned sites, such as, you know, Defence Forces sites or HSE sites. I think that is probably the only credible solution in town at the moment, because I think it's plain favour to see that there's a severe shortage at the moment, and that is only going to be even further exacerbated with the numbers that we're going to expect.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of temporary accommodation, and no one would ever suggest that a container, a shipping container, is a permanent thing that would be your lifetime home, but they use them elsewhere. They're refurbed and they're warm and dry, and they have a bathroom and all the rest of it, and they could be turned around quickly. Whereas even the best prefabs really take a hell of a long time to put up. You know, you're talking about minimum maybe 6 to 9 months, whereas a container village on state-owned land could probably go up rather more faster. But they turned their face against those proposals a long time ago.
Yeah, I think the last time I was on with you, you were talking about these containers again. I think you visited them previously, Pat. I actually haven't spoken to anyone in government about them, so I'd be interested to hear what they say on it. But I think I'd be surprised that, given the current squeeze on accommodation, I'd be amazed that if government weren't considering all options that were available, simply to give them some solution and some breathing space, because at the moment they don't have that.
Yeah, or perhaps an aging ocean liner that would be moored in Dublin Port, which was another suggestion. So this is going to be the biggest headache for the government right up till the end of its term.
Undoubtedly, absolutely, undoubtedly. And I guess it's how they manage that. I think the only fortunate thing that the government has at the moment is that none of the main political parties have sought to weaponize it yet. And I say yet because we've seen subtle shifts in the political sphere on this. But we don't have a kind of if you look to Sweden, we don't have a kind of a Sweden Democrat style, fully fledged anti-immigrant party. Now, I guess the fear is that the ground is fertile for that to happen. And I was actually interviewing someone from in that world previously, and they felt that they didn't feel that Sinn Féin would be able to move fully into that space simply because of what they had said previously, which leaves a massive, big, open gateway for a new party if they wanted to come in and grab that space. So I think the government has been fortunate that no one has done that yet, but they will certainly be acutely aware and mindful of the threat of that happening.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that they would get a huge number of either council seats or Dáil seats, or even a European seat, but what it might do to other parties who might see a loss of their support. But the proportional representation system tends to correct that a bit. Anyway, Craig, look, thank you very much for your insights on all of that. That's Craig Hughes, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.